Okay, get this. Picture 1998.
Oh, wow.
The
Yeah.
internet, like the Wild West days, right? And you're undercover, posing as a 14-year-old girl in some chat room. That's People v. Thousand, this crazy Michigan Supreme Court case that still matters so much for how we deal with internet crime today. We're going deep on this one. What happens when, like, some adult tries to get with this girl who's actually a cop? Can you be guilty of something that literally couldn't have happened? That's the wild part of this whole thing.
People v. Thousand is, well, it really makes you think about this impossibility thing, right? Like, how does that work with intent? The lower courts, at first, they were like, nope, charges dismissed, legal impossibility, because Becca, the supposed minor, was a cop. They said he couldn't really commit the crime, you know. But then the Court of Appeals, they brought back one charge, the whole trying to send obscene stuff. And then the Michigan Supreme Court, they flipped the script.
So back and forth, back and forth. What the Michigan Supreme Court end up doing? Did they say, hey, no real minor, no crime?
They actually reversed that decision on the obscene material charge. And the way they explained it, that's what's important for understanding attempt in Michigan law. They basically said, look, it couldn't have happened the way you thought. That's factual impossibility. But for attempt, that doesn't matter. They pointed right to the law, MCL 750.92, and it all comes down to the guy's intent. Did he take real steps towards the crime? Thousand sending those explicit messages and trying to meet up. To the court, that was enough, even though it couldn't really happen.
Hold on. So even if you're being tricked by the cops, if you think it's a crime and you like take steps towards it, you're cooked in Michigan.
Yep. And that's why People v. Thousand is such a big deal. The whole impossibility doctrine, that's where they really dug in. Factual impossibility versus legal impossibility. Here, it was all about what was going on in Thousand's head, plus what he actually did. In Michigan, you can't just say, oh, I didn't know it was impossible and get off scot-free.
It's only a crime if you get away with it. Not so much anymore, huh? What about that other charge, solicitation to commit criminal sexual conduct? Same problem, right? Couldn't really happen.
This is where it gets even wilder because this charge, gone, dismissed, but not for the impossibility thing. It's all about how the law itself is worded. MCL 750.157B.
Yeah.
Really specific.
Oh, the lovely world of legal technicalities. Go on, I'm hooked.
That law, it says you got to be soliciting another person to do a felony because the officer pretending to be Becca couldn't actually consent to what Thousand wanted. Legally, it's like the pieces of the crime just weren't there. You need a real person being solicited, and here, nope. So even though Thousand had the thought, the law's specific wording got him out of that one.
So the law being super specific helped him out there, even though, I mean, come on, he was trying to, feels like the legal system was trying to catch up with the whole internet thing, right? Were there any judges who disagreed with all this?
Oh, absolutely. And they bring up some great points, Justice Kelly and Justice Taylor. Both dissented, but for different reasons.
Now, this is where it gets good. What didn't they like about the majority's decision?
Justice Kelly, they were all about legal impossibility, thought it should absolutely be a defense, you know, in Michigan. Like, they really felt the majority opinion was messing with, like, established law and that just focusing on what Thousand was thinking without looking at if the crime could even happen was kind of dangerous.
So even though Thousand thought he was talking to a minor and he did stuff to try and meet up to Justice Kelly, it shouldn't have mattered because it couldn't actually happen.
Right. Justice Kelly's point was like the whole point of criminal law is to punish bad actions, things that actually hurt someone, not just thoughts, right? Punishing someone for trying something that couldn't happen, to them, that was wrong, didn't fit with how criminal law is supposed to work.
It makes you think about what makes something criminal, right? Like, is it what you're thinking, what you do, or what actually happens because of it? What about Justice Taylor? What was their problem?
Justice Taylor, they were focused on that solicitation charge. They said the majority was reading that law way too narrowly, and it should be about what the defendant wanted to do and what they asked for, even if the other person couldn't actually go through with it. Like, the law should care that you tried to get someone else to commit a crime, even if it was impossible.
So even though the cop couldn't have actually, you know, done what Hollis Listens wanted, Justice Taylor thought his intent and trying to get a minor to do that should have been enough.
Yeah, because to Justice Taylor, focusing on the other person's ability to do the crime was a problem. Like, it created this weird loophole where you could get away with something serious just because the person you were asking couldn't do it. It's a tough one for sure.
It really shows you how the law, it has trouble keeping up with like technology and online stuff, right?
Yeah.
This was 98. Think how much the internet's changed since then.
You got it, People v. Thousand. it changed how these online sting operations, you know, how they're done, how they're prosecuted. It basically told everyone, hey, if you think you're committing a crime online, it doesn't matter if it's actually possible, you can still be in trouble.
It's not like the internet's someplace where anything goes.
Oh.
But it does make you think about those stings, right? Like, is it okay to trick people into crimes that could never happen in the first place?
It's this balance, gotta protect potential victims, but the police can't go too far either, right? Can't just make thinking about something illegal.
And this isn't just about, you know, these child exploitation cases. Mm-hmm. What they decided here, it matters for all kinds of online crime, fraud, identity theft, cyber stalking, you name it.
Totally. It's like the basis for a lot of how online crimes get prosecuted, and what it says about the law still matters today.
So for our listeners, especially the lawyers and law students,
yeah,
what's the big takeaway from People v. Thousand? What do they need to know?
The biggest thing, law's always changing, especially with the internet. Something that was impossible yesterday could be real today, so lawyers gotta keep up. And this case shows how important the exact words of the law are. Sometimes those little details can decide a whole case, even if the intent seems clear.
It's like being a lawyer now. You gotta know the law and all this tech stuff too. This case, it's like a reminder of how far we've come, but it's not over yet. There's one more thing about People v. Thousand we got to look at, those dissenting opinions. They give you a different way of thinking about the majority opinion, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always good to consider different sides.
Yeah, dissents, people don't always pay attention to them, but they're important. They show you other ways of seeing things, challenge what you think you know, and they can even change how the law develops in the future.
Let's get into those dissents, see what they can teach us. So, Justice Kelly, they really thought legal impossibility should be a defense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they were worried the majority opinion was saying you could convict someone just for thinking about doing something bad.
Yeah. Justice Kelly's argument, it was all about how criminal law, it's supposed to be about punishing actions that hurt people, not just thoughts or wishes. To them, if a crime couldn't actually happen, it didn't matter what the person intended, you shouldn't punish them.
So even though Thousand was trying to get with a minor, took steps to do it because Becca was a cop,
mm-hmm,
it should have been case closed.
Right. Justice Kelly wanted the law to look at like the whole picture, not just what the defendant was thinking, but if the crime could even happen in the real world. They also said the majority was going against how legal impossibility had been used in Michigan law before.
Sounds like consistency mattered a lot to Justice Kelly, making sure the law was applied the same way every time.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Taylor's dissent, they were focused on the solicitation charge, right?
Yep, Justice Taylor, their thing was, they thought the majority was reading that solicitation law way too strictly. To them, it should have been enough that the defendant wanted to do something illegal and asked someone else to do it, even if that other person couldn't actually go through with it. The attempt to get someone involved in a crime, that's what should matter, whether or not the crime actually happened.
So, Thousand wanting to get a minor involved, even though it was a cop and couldn't happen, Justice Taylor thought that should have been enough to convict him.
That's it, because to Justice Taylor, saying the other person had to be able to actually do the crime, that created a loophole. Someone could try to get away with something serious just because the person they asked couldn't actually do it.
It's like Justice Taylor was trying to say, hey, we got to protect people, but the law has to make sense too. These two dissents, they really make you think, huh, what makes something a crime? Intent versus what you actually do. How do those rules work online?
It's what makes People v. Thousand so interesting to look at, even now. It's like a time capsule, showing how the law tried to figure out the internet and those dissents. They remind us that even in big cases, there are different ways of seeing things.
It's like we took this legal road trip, right? Through the lower courts, the Michigan Supreme Court, and now these really interesting dissents.
The big lesson is, law's always changing, especially with technology, and lawyers gotta be ready for that.
For everyone listening, lawyers, law students, what's the one thing they should remember from People v. Thousand?
I'd say think critically. Don't assume the law is always simple. There's often more than one right answer. Look at all sides, consider different opinions, and think carefully, especially when the lines between real life and the internet get blurry.
Well put. People v. Thousand, it reminds us that law is not static. It's always changing. And trying to adapt to new stuff always leads to, you know, debates, disagreements. But in the end, it helps us understand the law better.
It makes us ask hard questions, challenge what we think we know, and consider what those legal interpretations really mean. Those tough questions, they're what lead to a better legal system, one that can deal with technology and still be fair to everyone.
That wraps it up for our deep dive into People v. Thousand. Hopefully it was interesting, maybe got you thinking about some stuff. Until next time, stay sharp, and remember, law's a journey, not a destination.